But let's commence today's show talking politics with popular Washington Post contributing opinion columnist Theodore Johnson. His forthcoming text is called If We Are Brave, Essays from Black Americana. Johnson writes, and I quote, "The United States claims to be a nation founded on an idea, but Americans do not agree on what that idea is, what it should do, or who it is for. We use the same words, but do not speak the same language," close quote. I am pleased to welcome Theodore Johnson to this program. Ted Johnson, how are you today, sir?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I appreciate you having me on.
It's good to have you on. Thanks for the time. Want to make the most of it. Let me just jump right in with this. We'll get to the book and a few other things I want to cover. A lot of breaking news, as always, any day these days, but certainly at the start of the week. The story that will not abate is the story that we've been covering for days now, it seems, of these protests on college campuses all across the country. Hundreds, literally hundreds of students arrested over the weekend. I don't need to color it much more than that. What's your read of these growing protests and the way that schools are or are not handling these protests?
Yeah, it's such an interesting set of circumstances. I mean, I'm a little too young to remember this in real life, but it feels a lot like the Vietnam War era, where it was the youngest Americans, folks on college campuses that tend to be more progressive, more anti-war than the rest of society, that are calling the government to account for their actions overseas and are doing so by exerting pressure externally on the political apparatus through campus protest. So this is new. This is as American as apple pie for folks to do this. What is also as American as apple pie is the response from institutions in power to disperse protest. And more times than not, law enforcement, whether you're a university, a city council, a private corporation, law enforcement are the folks that are first called to try to break the protest, to get people to stop sort of disrupting society. And that's what we're watching play out. Now, it's almost beside the point now on what side of the ideological argument folks are, because the confrontation is creating its own spectacle, and its own set of questions about liberty and equality and the rights of people to speak freely and protest. So it's the campus protests have actually compounded the issue or complicated the issue by introducing First Amendment and sort of safe community conversations into one that's ostensibly mostly about war and human rights.
When we come forward, I want to talk about that part. As they say, the confrontation as spectacle. I love the phrase, the way you put it, and that's why he's an opinion columnist. He knows how to turn a phrase. The confrontation as spectacle in and of itself. We'll talk about that and a great deal more with Ted Johnson from the Washington Post, author of the forthcoming book, If We Are Brave, Essays from Black Americana. We'll get into that as well when we come forward on Tavis Smiley.
Hope, agency, dignity. This is Tavis Smiley.
Can you dig it?
Come on!
Smart talk for curious people just like you. You're listening to Tavis Smiley.
Tavis Smiley and Ted Johnson of the Washington Post. Ted, that phrase you used earlier, unpack it for me. The confrontation as spectacle on these college campuses.
Yeah, it's a way of changing the conversation, frankly. And it's not that the concerns aren't real. I mean, people's safety and their well-being, these things matter. But the confrontation itself becomes the point of conversation instead of the reason for protest. We saw the same thing after George Floyd's murder. It was as if government was saying, Donald Trump in particular, that, whatever the nation may think about race or racism or racial justice, George Floyd, police brutality, all these big questions, none of it matters until y'all act right. And once people learn how to act right, stop looting and stealing from stores and using protests as a cover for crime, then maybe a conversation about racial justice can be had. But until then, there's nothing to talk about. And it's ridiculous. If acting right was the way forward on questions of liberty and freedom and equality, we would already have it. The protest is because government has not fulfilled its end of the bargain, and protest is a backlash to that. So we can't be distracted. Again, very big questions, very important things happening on college campuses. But that is a separate conversation from what's happening in Israel and Gaza. We can have both of those conversations at the same time without allowing the campus conflicts to sort of win the day in the news cycle and distract us from other issues that are going on.
Let me expand our purview just a little bit more broadly here, if I can. There are so many fault lines, Ted, as you know, around and along this particular conversation. But one of those fault lines is, and I'm paying more and more attention to this, one of those fault lines is the way these demonstrations, these protests are dividing the Democratic Party in a major election year. Let me just tell a quick story watching my time here. So yesterday, I attended church here in Los Angeles, where this show emanates live from every day across the country. And I wasn't at my home church. I attend a little small church. But yesterday, a friend of mine was in town and was the main speaker, the morning speaker, at a major, major mega church in this city. I mean, thousands and thousands of members. The place holds thousands of people. If you're in L.A., ain't but a few choices to choose from, a few options to choose from. It was a black church, so you know what I'm talking about, right? So he was speaking yesterday at this major church. And I pay attention to these things, as do you, and those of us who do what you and I do, we pay attention to these things others may not be really tapped into. So in his sermon yesterday, he made reference to the fact that now is just not the time for us to be giving Joe Biden a hard time. That Donald Trump is an existential threat to this democracy, and that whatever our grievances are, legitimate or otherwise, and he made the point, we got to hold folk accountable, but now is just not the time to be messing with Joe Biden, given the threat that Donald Trump represents. And I sat there in this church packed with thousands of people, and I listened and paid attention to the very, very tepid response of this audience. And that said something to me. You cannot be in a black megachurch, a black progressive megachurch, with this many people, and you give a shout out to Joe Biden, and the applause was scant. It reminded me of that scene in Coming to America. After our boy had performed on stage, and the audience was like,
right. No bride to be in this one.
Exactly. If you know Coming to America, you know the scene. The applause was scant, and he did exit stage left, right? You all remember the scene. That's what it felt like in this church yesterday. And I sat there in that seat, and I was like, my Lord, Joe Biden is in trouble. Because even though black people understand the threat that Donald Trump is, I don't think it's a winning strategy to tell me to save the democracy one more again. Negroes have done that repeatedly. We have saved this democracy over and over and over again. I digress for now. You take my point. I'll come back to that later in the show, perhaps. But I see these fault lines inside the Democratic Party, and that was a major fault line that I sort of picked up on yesterday. I digress. Your thoughts?
No, you're right. I mean, look, in the civil rights era, there's a lot to be made of black civil rights activists working with Jewish funders or Jewish lawyers and activists from the North to try to transform the South. And so in the civil rights era, it would almost seem that there's a kind of has been a natural allegiance in one way or another. But there's always been tension alongside that allegiance. And what this question is putting before the black community now, this question of Israel and Palestine and Gaza, is about allegiances. It's about power versus people. It's about minority rights versus majority rights. It's all of the questions that have governed life in America for black folks, but dropped in another locale. And we're not a political monolith. Black folks see politics differently, see issues differently. So it shouldn't be surprising that that black folks have differing opinions on this. But to your point, the idea that you either protest or you vote, that you're either unhappy with the administration or you love it and participate in democracy, is a false choice. We don't have to make the choice. We can protest and vote. We can disagree and vote. A lot of the people that died, black folks in particular, for our country, died for the right to access democracy, for the right to vote. So to not exercise it or to treat it like it's expendable just because you disagree on some maybe very core issues with the sitting president or other nominees doesn't mean you abdicate the right to exercise this hard-won right on the backs of on the blood and sweat of many folks over a generation. So I just say, if you want to protest, fine. If you want to be unhappy with Biden, fine. But still exercise your right to vote and do what's best for the, you know, the country, for our democracy, for the greater good.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you can both protest and vote, but I'm getting really, really disturbed by these persons who are suggesting mm-hmm. that we shouldn't have any critique of Joe Biden right now just because of the threat that Trump represents. I don't see that as a winning strategy. And as I said before in this program, Ted, and want to get your temperature on this right quick, Joe Biden very shrewdly, there are a number of words I could use, adjectives, but very shrewdly, I think strategically, and I might add even brilliantly, suggested in South Carolina on the advice of one James Clyburn that if he were elected, he'd put a black woman on the U.S. Supreme Court. He did that. But as we all recall, the minute he made that commitment, black women lined up behind Joe Biden and they saved his candidacy. And as I've said many times, don't sell black folks short. By saving his candidacy, we also saved the democracy. We didn't just do one, we did both. We saved his campaign and in so doing, I think, saved his democracy. I think that Joe Biden needs another moment like that. I'm telling you, and I keep telling the Democratic Party, just telling Negroes that you should vote once again to save the democracy from this guy is not a dog that's going to hunt, I believe, in this particular election. So it raises the question as to what Joe Biden is going to do akin to the KBJ promise, before we knew it was KBJ, what he's going to do akin to that to motivate these black folk to get out this time around. And had a guest on this program last week who suggested that one of the ways to do that is to just simply say, I am going to establish a reparations commission. Now, we know ain't nothing going to get done between now and November, but you gave us a Juneteenth holiday that didn't nobody even ask for. we'll take it. We ain't going to give it back, but didn't nobody ask for it, right? But just to say, I am going to establish a reparations commission, as my friend Gavin Newsom did out in California, and we'll at least begin this conversation. That would excite and energize the black base and the black base, and might get them to turn out. That's just one suggestion made by one guest last week. I don't know if that's the end all be all, but I do know, or at least I feel in my spirit, and this ain't my first rodeo, that they're going to have to do something. But just telling black folk to vote for the purposes of saving the democracy, I just don't see that being the answer to the prayer, Ted Johnson.
No, you're right. You're right. The other guy is worse is not a winning electoral strategy.
Yes.
And especially for black folks. And so you're right. I mean, there's going to have to be something. And I don't know what that something is. Maybe it's, you know, perhaps reparations. The polling I've seen suggests that even black folks are divided, not about the question of reparations, but how to do it.
How to define it.
And,
yeah,
you know, there's different kind of schemes. Mm-hmm. But look, presidents in the past have created civil rights commissions. Lyndon Baines Johnson did it. Truman did it. You don't have to wait for a law to pass to establish a commission, a congressional commission. Presidents can establish commissions by executive order anytime they want to. The problem Biden has, and the challenge, he's a pragmatic man, I think, is that if he were to take that step, how many white voters would he lose by suggesting a presidential commission on reparations is the right thing? And that's the balance of the Democratic Party. Can you mobilize black folks without demobilizing or deterring white voters who might be somewhat inclined to not vote or vote for Trump?
Well, now this is getting good, because what you've just done, Ted Johnson, whether you intended to or not, and you're brilliant, so I assume you did, you just flipped the frame. Here's my point. Mm. If Biden were to do that, then the good white folk would have to answer the question about how existential the threat is of Donald Trump and not the Negroes. Why do we have to buy that argument? But the good white folk ain't got to buy that argument.
Right, right. It's not on us to save democracy. When black folks save democracy, all we are doing is trying to save ourselves.
That's right.
Trying to preserve our safety, security, access to liberty, democracy, et cetera. Democracy is the beneficiary of inclusion of black folks. So the United States benefits when black folks are empowered. So our saving democracy is not all altruism. A lot of that is because we as a people want to survive and have our place in the country, and democracy is the means to do it.
Yeah, I just don't buy that argument that you can be afraid of losing the white vote, but not be afraid of losing the black vote. That's the wrong frame for me.
That's right.
I don't like that. I don't like it at all. Watching my timer, I want to get to your book here in just a second and just tease it up before it comes out a little bit later. But one question, you can't do this without asking at least one Trump question, even though I'd prefer not to. The other guy is on the ballot, or will be on the ballot, in all these states. It appears, a big story today in the New York Times, Washington Post, one of these papers. I know you're with the Washington Post. I read so many things before coming on the air. But a big story, I think, in the Times about the fact that Donald Trump, it appears, is going to be able to at least run the clock out on facing any legal ramifications of all the things he's been accused of. And that really does sort of now set the frame, because we keep reading this poll that if he's convicted, his numbers go down. But now we just don't know how that story is going to play out. Your thoughts on that right quick?
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I don't think if he is not convicted prior to the election, I don't think a pending conviction is going to influence the votes of people on the fence even. Mm-hmm. I think folks have pretty much made up their mind. If he's on the ballot, they're either voting for him or they're not. And so I think it'll play out as a lot of the polls have suggested, which is that Trump will probably do a little bit better with black voters than he did last time, which, again, will be below the historical average over the last 4 or 5 decades. And you know, I think the last poll I saw also said that when Robert Kennedy is on the same ballot, Trump finishes third behind Kennedy, with all of Biden, you know, Biden basically giving up black voters to Kennedy when there's a third person on there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens, but I don't think the pending charges or the pending potential of being incarcerated is going to affect Trump's chances in November, unless he actually is incarcerated. And that looks like it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and that makes the point even more. Beyond Bobby Kennedy, there is our friend and brother Cornel West. There's Jill Stein.
West, right.
There are others who are nipping at his heels. And again, as I suggested moments ago, I don't know what the answer is. It ain't my job. But if they don't figure something out that is akin to the KBJ promise 4 years ago, and you got folk nipping at your heels like you didn't have 4 years ago, siphoning off votes a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there. All it takes is a little bit to lose. He only won Michigan.
Right.
He only won Michigan by 3 points last time. So you ain't got a whole lot to sacrifice anyway. And I just don't know how long it's going to take for the Biden people to figure this out. I digress for now. In the 4 minutes I have left, let me pivot to your book, your forthcoming book, If We Are Brave, Essays from Black Americana. I love the title, If We Are Brave. Unpack that for me for starters.
Yeah, so this is essentially a book all about what we've been talking about for the last half hour here. What is the future of the country? What role do black people play in shaping that future? And what does that say about the different issues and elections and things that the country is grappling with? And I tackle these questions: affirmative action, police brutality, the state of democracy, in a set of 8 essays that I think folks are going to love. The bottom core idea of the whole thing is that the future of this country is contingent on the inclusion of black folks.
Mm-hmm.
The United States cannot die without us, and it cannot live without us, and it cannot die without our permission.
Mm.
And that is a power that black America has, and this book tries to tell that particular story in a set of essays.
When you say if we are brave, who's the we?
Yeah, it is we as black people and we as Americans. We, the United States, are we brave enough to confront the truth about the role race has played in shaping an unjust and an unequal nation? And we as black people, are we brave enough to live up to, frankly, the legacies of those who came before us and demand that America be better than it has been, and not that the thing needs to be burned to the ground or dismantled or anything like that? We will improve this project that we put a lot of blood and sweat and tears into over the last 250 years plus.
I guess the question, Ted Johnson, is whether or not that is, in fact, an open question. Is it really an open question about whether or not America is brave enough to do that? Is the jury already in on that question?
Yeah, the question is we better be brave. you know, like there's no option here. We can't check out and expect things to just get better. We can't engage and insist that everyone accept everything that we want without compromise. This is going to take some negotiation, a bit of a compromise, a little bit of a dance. That's what democracies are. We deliberate and we agree to abide by the decisions when the process is fair and just. But it doesn't mean the conversation is over. It doesn't mean that we give up our principles. It just means that we're willing to engage in this thing that we helped build in order to make it better for those who come after us.
Yeah.
And it's an open question because it's not inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
We may not be brave enough to make this thing work, but we'd better be if we hope to, again, not squander the sacrifices of previous generations.
I got 45 seconds to say a quick word about the line I quoted from you earlier in the text. We use the same words, but do not speak the same language.
That's right. When folks say, do you believe in democracy? Some people are essentially asking, Do you believe that the way I think America should be shaped is the right way, to the exclusion of all others? And so because we don't really define who democracy is for, who should be able to call government to the carpet and make demands of them, who holds status to demand equal treatment, then we can talk about the process of democracy, the process of inclusion all we want to, but we have a society structured in a way that disenfranchises and excludes some folks because of their class, their race, their religious beliefs, their nation of origin. This nation will be whatever we build it to be, and black folks will need to be at the forefront to make sure it's a fair and equal just society.
His name is Ted Johnson, to be exact, Theodore R. Johnson. He's a contributing columnist for the Washington Post, senior advisor at New America, Navy vet, HBCU educated. Go ahead and shout it out right quick.
Hampton U.
There you go. Hampton U. And I see some symbol here that says he belongs to some fraternity, but I don't recognize it.
I think you do. The Omega Psi Phi Fraternity.
Yeah, I ain't mad at him. His forthcoming book is called If We Are Brave, Essays from Black Americana. Ted, all the best to you. We'll do it again, my friend. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. I look forward to it.
More Tavis Smiley when we come forward.
What's your quarrel with the world? You're listening to Tavis Smiley.